Manhattan, New York City, to the world. Tom Sullivan is on now.
Yeah, here we are with the big radio show. Happy Tuesday to you on the 17th day of April 2018. My name is Tom Sullivan, and this story, I think you've probably heard by now that the stories were going along that Barbara Bush is not doing well and is in her 90s. And that she is in failing health, and the family is with her. And the rest of the story changes now because she's 92 years of age. She's been through a series of hospitalizations. And the story now changes to where, beyond the fact that she's in failing health, after consulting with her family and her doctors, she has decided not to seek additional medical treatment and instead will focus on what is called palliative care or comfort care. So I started thinking about this. She and George H.W. Bush have been married for 73 years. They had six children. One daughter died at age 3. But this is something where you go, no, thank you. I don't need any more medical care. And so for her to make the decision to stop treatment, she has COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So her lungs are bad. She has a hard time breathing. She also has some form of heart disease. She's 92. And her condition has worsened over the last year. So she finally says, stop with the medical. Back away from me, doctors. I will take it from here. So there's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today, the op-ed section, about from a guy named Mark Siegel, who said, I was resistant to the concept. Palliative care is often unpopular. First time I saw it, I saw somebody dealing with somebody with severe heart failure. And he writes, it's far easier to figure out the point of no return for somebody who has cancer than for somebody who has heart or lung disease. The problem with all of this is that you want to, many times there is a family member, or even sometimes a doctor, mostly it's a family member that says, no, keep fighting, keep going in, having more medical treatments, go back to the hospital, let them plug in all these tubes and have all these beeping machines around you and everything else. Or it comes from the fear of dying. They say, no, keep trying. I want everything known to medical science. Because, hey, who knows? They've got all kinds of new transplants that they can do. They've got they can thread a valve into your heart through a catheter in your leg, and boom, you got a brand new valve. They've got all kinds of new drugs, medications. Who knows? They might come up with some. In fact, I am convinced. Whenever I die, whatever I die of, I am convinced that they will come out with a cure shortly thereafter, whatever it is. I had polio when I was a little kid. Shortly after I got polio, Jonas Salk came up with the polio vaccine. Bam! Cured. Everybody. Not me. I had to go through the whole drill. So, but isn't that where you might be when you're going, oh boy, I'm really in bad shape. My health is fading. My health is getting worse. What do you do? Do you consider Barbara Bush to be courageous in saying, just give me comfort care, please? Enough already about all the stuff that you do. You've brought me over to the hospital a bunch of times. I get plugged into all these machines. My condition is getting worse. Unplug all the machines and just let me be comfortable. Let me die, is what she's saying. But there are people in the family that say, no, 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 no. So I thought about her and her decision. And I don't know if you can place yourself in that position. I don't know if you can place yourself in that position where you really, truly are facing the end of your life. And you don't try to grasp on to one more effort to keep going. You acknowledge this is the end. I don't know. I went around and around when my mother passed away. She had a do not resuscitate in her charts. And my sister, who's a nurse, talked to me and my brother about it and said, you don't realize what it means if they have to try to resuscitate mom. They will throw her on the floor because you can't be in a bed. You got to be on a hard surface. Throw her on the floor, break her ribs, trying to keep her alive. If she is at point where it comes down to should we resuscitate or not, my mother had a do not resuscitate. I got that. I was fine with that. First of all, it was my mother. It wasn't me. So when you look in the mirror at yourself, even though my mother, for heaven's sakes, there's nobody closer that you can get to than your mother. And I said, that's fine for her. But I don't know what happens when we make these decisions about our very own life. This is it. It's over. I am out of here. I don't know exactly when, but it's going to be soon. My health is going downhill. Nothing's improving me. Just step away, unplug the machines, and keep me comfortable. And keeping comfortable, by the way, is kind of a nice way of saying, drug me up. Drug me up so I'm essentially not fully cognizant of what's going on. So I don't know what you think about Barbara Bush and her decision. She's a famous lady, married to a president, a son who's a president, a strong woman of her own right, who says at 92, with heart disease and COPD, she says, just keep me comfortable. Can you make that decision for yourself? Not for your mother, not for your father, not for a relative, not for a child, God forbid. Can you make that decision for yourself to say, it's over? It's not doing the assisted suicide routine where you go in and say, I want you to help me die. She is dying, is what she's acknowledging. I am dying, she says. So let me die in comfort. No more wires, no more needles, no more sticking me with things up my nose, in my ears. Just leave me alone. I don't know, maybe when you're 92, maybe you've lived your life. I think that's the problem for most of us is we're not 92 and we still have more life to live. We don't know how much more life we've got to live, but we want to have more life to live. Maybe when we're 92, we go, okay, I've run the road race. I've done it. Nothing left to do. Anyway, I thought her decision is a very courageous decision. Very courageous. I don't know if we would do the same. Or would you say there might be a new drug that comes out next week that will cure this COPD? There might be a new operation next week that I could have that has never been done before, but it would fix my heart. And I could live to what? Maybe that's where she's going. What do I want to live to? 102? Do you think you have the courage to say at some point in your life, no more medical care? That's what Barbara Bush is saying. The phone number here is 855-295-6600. Or is this like you don't know what you're going to do if somebody yells fire in a theater until somebody yells fire in a theater? You don't know what you're going to do when you're 92 and you've got an illness. Until you're 92 and you've got an illness. Then you'll know what you're going to do. Phone number is 855-295-6600. I think it's pretty courageous. None of us are going to live forever. I don't know. I don't know the woman. I've met her twice. Last time I saw her, she was at an event that I was emceeing, and I spent some time backstage with her. That was probably about 12 years ago. 12, 13, 14 years ago, somewhere around there. Strong lady. But she's 92 and she's in bad health. The phone number here is 855-295-6600. You can find my phone numbers, my email address, the links to my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also you can find my podcast. It's all there on my website, TomSullivan.com.
Opinions that matter. Radio that makes you think. Tom Sullivan.
So Barbara Bush, you've heard the stories the last couple of days about how she's in failing health. I just, when she said, I'm going to stop medical treatment and focus on comfort care, courageous decision on her part, I think. I think. I don't know if I could make that same decision. And I don't think you or me or anybody else knows until we get there. A lot of people don't have that choice. You know, you die of a massive heart attack. You don't have a choice. If you get in a terrible accident, you don't have that choice. But if you're in failing health, what point do you draw the line? Phone number is 855-295-6600. Ann in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I think what Barbara's doing is something that a lot of people are doing these days. They're determining ahead of time, in some cases, with a durable power of attorney for health care, exactly what type of care and the intensity of care that they want to receive when they get to a point where their quality of life is just very poor. And she, you know, this will help her avoid any other family members' decisions. You can do it as long as you're of sound mind.
Right.
They can't take a patient with dementia and ask them what they want. But
right.
if
right.
you fill out these forms ahead of time, then you basically have control even after you lose
well,
consciousness. People
yeah,
have
yes and
it.
Yes and no. So I fill out these forms today. I am let's not argue whether I'm of sound mind. But I fill these forms out today. That doesn't mean, though, that somewhere down the road that, oh, I didn't know that I was going to have this kind of illness. I didn't know that. Why, I'm hoping for the for this wonderful medical breakthrough that might be happening here very soon. So I really don't want to forget what I said, sort of thing. I mean, I don't know whether you can really go through it when it's time to walk through that door. It's easy to say it now when you're in good health and of good mind, but it's another thing when you are literally on your deathbed, what you want to do.
Well, I was a hospice nurse for 20 years, and many, many people did that, and also they designate a second person to make decisions if they become unable to. So that's somebody that you're going to be talking to who's going to have a really good understanding of what it is you want and what you don't want. And, of course, they look at the totality of the situation. If you can't walk and you can't swallow, you're in pain, why would you want to sustain your life?
My sister was in hospice nurse as well, so she did not do it for 20 years. Though I think she did it for most of that, but that's a tough job. But
you know, a lot of people are also stopping eating and drinking when they don't want their lives to last much longer. So that's also a choice.
Well, I know that's a sign that somebody is near death when they give up on eating and swallowing and things like that. But
it's a thing, though, as well. You know, not just not being able to swallow, but saying, I'm just not going to take any more sustenance in because I don't want this to continue, you know. So it's very common.
Well, there's a story from CBS. A source close to the Bush family tells CBS News that Mrs. Bush's COPD makes it difficult for her to breathe. She is alert and was having conversations last night. She's also having a bourbon.
Oh, good.
So good for her.
You gotta write that down on the form.
Yes, I don't want to eat or drink anything other than a bourbon. So bring me a bunch of shot glasses here, please.
There you go.
Have you seen people do that?
Thanks for bringing up the topic. Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. I have. Absolutely. Where they whatever it is they want at the end. They want their favorite food or something. They want to eat nothing but cream puffs and, you know, drink wine, some people, cannabis. It's just, you know, sure, it's your right.
Well, I guess the big question is, what do we have the guts and the courage, I guess, to do that at the right time? And I've got to hit the break, but thank you very much for your call, and thank you for what you've done for people as well. 855-295-6600. You think you'll have the courage to do this, Barbara Bush?
From New York City to the world, Tom Sullivan.
Yeah, hello, world. Just talking about Barbara Bush, and it's her story today, but it's your story and my story down the road. We don't know when, but Barbara Bush is reported in failing health and has told her family and the doctors that she wants to stop medical treatment. She just wants comfort care, which is basically like the nurse that called that was you know, you just keep people comfortable while they die. She stopped it. Medical care. Would you have the courage to do that? 855-295-6600. Susan in Rochester, Minnesota. Hello, Susan.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I work in hospice, and my job is to actually sit down and visit with folks every day that are contemplating doing just exactly what Mrs. Bush is doing.
Yeah.
And it comes a point where for them to continue aggressively treating what they have going on becomes more of a cost to them, and the return on investment doesn't equal the cost.
The cost, though, not a money cost.
Right. So I'm talking, right, a physical cost, emotional cost, spiritual cost. And so they will choose to go the route of palliative, comfort care, hospice, whichever, you know, whatever you want to name it.
Yeah,
but they will
yeah.
choose that route because it allows them not necessarily the quantity of life, but a better quality of life.
What could you put a percentage on this? What percentage of people that you have treated in hospice have chosen this route?
For my folks that we treat, I mean, and mind you, I will preface that we do at times have family members that make the choice if someone's not able to do it.
Right.
But, you know, probably 40% of the people that I deal with are making that decision for themselves.
Really? So it's almost half and half. Almost.
Yeah. Almost half and half. And you'll find when somebody's at that stage in life, I hear a lot of what I'm doing right now is existing. It's not living.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. So that starts to change your entire, you know, you and I look at it much differently because we're not imminently facing end of life. But for somebody who's looking at possibly, you know, 6-8 months of life or less, their outlook on things is immensely different than how you and I look at it.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a big wuss, but I go, I don't know, man. If somebody said you got 6 months to live, I think that'd be staggering. Staggering. And I think I would go for, well, what do you got up your sleeve, doctor? You got some experimental, you know, magic here that you can play?
Well, yeah. And mind you, when somebody makes that choice, you know, occasionally I did have somebody with a rare form of cancer that there was an experimental treatment that came along and she chose to go ahead and try it. And we're going to be the first ones to say, heck yeah, if you want to try it, go for it. We'll discharge you off of our care and go. So, you know, because we don't want to have people give up hope. That's not really the idea. But the idea is to get that quality back that they're missing.
But Susan, isn't that what Barbara Bush is doing, is saying, I'm giving up hope?
Yes. No, because she's still got a lot of things to hope for. Because when we come in, it's not just a matter of keeping you comfortable, but it's also talking about what your goals are. Because there are still things that she wants to get done. And so how do we work together to help her accomplish as many of those things? And it can be something really little. You know, I had a guy that just wanted a chocolate shake one more time. Hey, we can do that. You know, I have people that have things they want to do that are pretty involved, and we work through those as well. But, you know, we're really actually giving them some hope in the way I look at it anyway.
Well, you hear stories about the fact that people have a date. They want to see their daughter or son get married. They want to see mm-hmm. their children mm-hmm. graduate from someplace. There's different things that they want to get to, and that many times they will get there and then pass on afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. We see that all the time. Yeah.
So what about when somebody is saying they want comfort care, doesn't that generally involve pain medication, which can make them really loopy? I mean, beyond loopy, to where they're drugged up. How can they still stay with their decisions, or does somebody else take over at that time and say, no, I'm going to change the decision here?
At that time, they have a power of attorney, but that will follow their directive. And in Minnesota, we use a form called a POST, which we fill out with them. That is what their wishes are at this time. And it's a living, breathing document. So if we are caring for somebody over the course of months, it can evolve and change. But the POST is a little different than a regular advance directive because a doctor actually signs it and becomes a medical order. So that way you have the assurance that your power of attorney, your medical power of attorney or family has to follow it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I guess if you have the courage to make that kind of decision, I wouldn't want somebody else changing it. But
Yeah, and to your point earlier, there's always a family member out there not most of the time, 90% of the time, there's that family member out there going, why are you choosing this? Let's do more and more. And so that helps kind of keep that person in check.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're not the ones getting the needle stuck in them 20 times a day. So they're going, no, keep trying, keep trying. Meantime, yeah, the person's
exactly.
suffering. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because a lot of times I get that person will, yeah, they'll leave the room, and then the person that's my potential patient will look at me and say, I know they want me to keep going, but I can't do this anymore.
Really? They just know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just know. Yeah.
Well, I think it's courageous, but maybe it's just normal to come to that point in life where you just say, I give up. I don't know. Fascinating. Susan, thank you very much. I do appreciate your call and what you help people with. Steve in Nevada. Steve, welcome. Hi, you're on the Tom Sullivan Show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Hi. I'm a second-time caller. I love your show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I'm a retired fireman out of California, and I know I've done CPR on probably 50 people or more, and I can't tell you how many times I've broken ribs. Once you're over 50 years old, it gets worse and worse, and you don't heal. So when I sat my parents down when we filled out their forms, and I told them this, I said, you know, if I do manage to start your heart again, you're still going to be in the hospital forever because all your bones are going to be broken. And that seemed like that made their decision easier. But they opted for comfort, just for drugs. And I know that being a fireman and seeing it going in and someone says, oh, there's a do not resuscitate order, but a family member might be there and say, I don't care what that says. Do whatever you can to save.
Oh boy!
Put that out the window.
Yeah.
And so, for anybody here, listeners who are thinking about doing this, make sure your loved ones, you've talked to them all and say, "Look, this is my wishes. Don't, change it when I'm on my deathbed. Don't be going in there, because you're going to incur tons of medical bills that could just wipe out your life savings."
The problem, it's good advice, Steve, and especially given your experience, but I don't think many people have that conversation because it's too gruesome for them to say, now, listen, let's sit down, family, and let's have this discussion about when I'm dying. And I think in many cases they don't have that discussion, so they have to rely upon the paperwork that's there. I got to hit the break. Steve, thank you. We'll take a short break and be right back. Don't go away. You can follow me on Twitter. The address is at Sullivan Radio. Jamie sends me a tweet, says, my grandma has a DNR, and grandpa did too. I have come to learn there are different types of DNR, do not resuscitates. My grandpa wanted no treatment at all. My grandma wants at least basic measure on hers. Yeah, I don't know how what are the circumstances? I don't know what the circumstances are going to be, so how do I know what I want them to do? Anita in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Hello, Anita.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Tom, what do you make of this?
I have kind of a old-fashioned look on things.
Yeah.
My mother was 91 when she passed away.
Yeah.
And she died right after 9/11. And right after 9/11, she said that she'd lived too long, she'd seen too much. By the end of the month, she was gone. But in her last year, when she was failing in health, she used to say, if there was no hope, there was no use.
No.
Short and sweet.
I think the hope thing, however you want to define what that hope line is, once you cross that line, which I think Barbara Bush has done, and your mother did,
yes.
Well, then what's left?
And then she died with dignity, with the sun on her back in her kitchen. She was very happy.
So do you think you have the courage to say stop all medical treatment when it's your day?
I pray I can follow in her footsteps.
Yeah.
She had a good life, and she was a good woman.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't get to sign up. We don't get to sign up for what the program is. I hear you loud and clear, though. My father died very peacefully, not in any pain of any kind. And I go, well, I'd like my dad's program, please. I don't like pain.
I think she also. We were with her. It was a fluke. We were all with her. And I have a feeling that she actually died before her body quit. You could almost sense something.
Wow. But she knew she wanted to, she had already lived too long, she said.
Yes. Well, yeah, she said that right after 9/11. She'd lived too long, she'd seen too much.
Well.
It was like the joy had left her. She was ready. She was, that was, I think, the icing on the cake.
See, that's that other question. Is there some point where you can shut yourself down by just saying, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
So therefore, I think Barbara Bush is there. I think it's very courageous, but I think for some reason people are able to, at some point when you reach that whatever line it is where you give up hope, you say, that's it. I've done everything I need to do.
Yeah.
I've seen too much. I've lived too long.
She was ready.
Yeah.
She was ready.
Where other people are not ready.
They're
not ready, and they fight with a I don't know, a strength that you wonder where it came from, and they live on. So
I think some of that is fear, Tom, because I'm sure my mother knew where she was going. She was going straight to heaven. There's no doubt in my mind about it. She's the type of person she was. I think some of the people who fight like cats and dogs to not is fear of not knowing where they're going or knowing where they're going.
Or know where they're going.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I don't.
In between the eyes. This is it.
Yeah, because at that point you look back on your life and go, well, I've been pretty good, but then there was this particular time. Oh, and then there was that thing.
Right.
Yeah, and you go, maybe I'm not so sure where I'm going.
Yes. Yes.
I do
believe she had a sensation that people were coming for her because she was 91, like I said, when she died, and I don't mean to sound like she was crazy or anything, but it's almost like her mother was coming for her. She wanted to be with her mother.
Anita, I don't, I appreciate you want to couch it a little bit, but that she wasn't crazy. No, that is repeated from family to family to family to family.
Yes.
That people say if you are at somebody's deathbed, that they will literally be talking to somebody that has passed on previously from one of their loved ones who's previously passed is calling them.
Yes. Yes.
It's way too beautiful. It's not like a some rare description. That is, I don't want to say it's frequent, but it's common enough to where you hear that you go, okay, something's going on there. Something.
Yes. And like I said, the fact that we were there, we were all there, and that was a fluke because we spelled each other. Someone was with her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, between me, my son, and my sister. But that particular day, we were all there at the same time, and that was very unusual. It's like it was meant to be.
It's coming for all of us. It's like Christmas is coming. It's going to be here next December 25th, and we are all going to have that last day on Earth. Don't know when it is.
Yeah.
But, Anita, thank you. I appreciate your call. Very interesting. Chris in Antioch, California. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hi.
My mother... my older brother passed 6 months before my mother did. and my mother went into the hospital with pneumonia, and she was sitting on the bed waiting, 3 days later, waiting for my other younger brother to come pick her up because she was being discharged when she coded. I had the medical directive. I live in a different state, and they called me, and I talked to the doctor and asked how long she'd been down, and they'd been working on her, and it'd been about 20 minutes, so I told them that she didn't want any advanced life support done. And when I flew back to Utah that night, I walked in the house. My other younger brother called me a murderous female dog, and we didn't speak for over 11 years.
He called you. He called you what? He called. Okay, so he was mad at you. Yeah, he was mad at you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he. But he kept calling me a murderer.
Oh boy. Because that's what you get in families where they don't want to follow the wishes of the person. They want to follow their wishes,
right,
which I think in many cases is basically their fears. They don't want somebody to go down the road that they don't have the courage to go down. That's why I say I think Barbara Bush is being very, very courageous to basically say, no, this is what I want to do. Stop with the medical. I don't blame her.
Well, and it was really hard on me to say, you know, yeah, no, stop.
Yes.
Let my mother die, you know.
But you're not alone, and there are many people out there that have a family member that wants to make a different decision. I think you should take great honor in the fact that you kept your loved one's wishes. That, I think, is more important.